Well, welcome, everybody. I am very happy to welcome you again to this truly remarkable venue, this opportunity we have to meet and speak with each other about what's real, without regard to where in the world we might actually be located. So, welcome. I'm happy to be here with you. It's always a mystery to me what in the world I'm going to talk about in these meetings, whether they are these online meetings or meetings in person with people. I sit here for a time quietly, waiting for something to come and present itself to me and say to me, this is what you're going to speak about, and it never happens. And then I start speaking to you or speaking with you, and what gets said, as now. I say that so that you'll know that I don't prepare these things. I really never have any idea what I'm going to say. So that you'll forgive me if I wander a bit, as I am now. I get many, many emails now. The more exposure that this teaching has in the world, the exponentially more emails that I get from people. And unfortunately, I don't answer anywhere near as many of them as I wish I could or as quickly as I would like to. But I read them all. And they all have one thing in common, or they seem to have. Actually, there's two classes of emails that I get. One type of email I get is these wondrous emails of confirmation that the practice of self-inquiry has proven itself in people's lives. That the fact is that though they may not have any better idea than I do why it should be so, that the continuing practice of looking at reality actually has the effect of making life sweeter and easier and less fraught with misery and suffering. And I love those. But the other sort of emails I get are the emails in which people seek some guidance out of a tangle of confusion or misunderstanding or seek clarification. And those emails all have one thing in common. They are all questions about phenomena that are arising within the mind. Questions about what this means, what it doesn't mean, what do I mean when I say this, what do I mean when I say that, why should it be so, and so forth. All these things are questions about the mind and about its opinion about things and its opinion about how things should be and how things should not be. And what's interesting about that to me is that the truth of the matter is that when I am speaking to you, encouraging you to do the practice of self-inquiry, I am, of course, speaking only the mind. And the mind itself, which is God knows what it is, the mind itself is the arena in which all these trials and tribulations and difficulties and sufferings and cravings and aversions and so forth take place. The mind itself is the arena in which the deep desire to be free from these trials and tribulations and sufferings and cravings and aversions arises. The mind itself is the arena in which the deep desire to be free, period, arises. It's the arena in which the utterances of past spiritual teachers and gurus and avatars and enlightened beings and so forth have their effect and excite us and create within us the idea that the freedom is an actual possibility, that freedom is an actual reality for us that can be attained or lost. And it's to that mind that I speak in the first place. But the paradox in speaking to the mind is that there's nothing about the mind that is the cause or of either, there's nothing about the mind that is the cause of suffering, nor is there anything about the mind that can be the cause of the end of suffering. The only thing that the mind can be persuaded to do is to look outside of the confines of its own confusion, to look for reality, the reality in which it itself comes and goes. Not in order that it can be transformed into that reality, or snuffed out and done away with so that reality alone remains, or any such nonsense as that, but in order that it can free itself of this underlying false belief that what I am is this mind, this life, this personal consciousness. This is all very mysterious when we try to speak about it. And the issues and the questions and the confusions that arise when we try to speak about it and that arise when I encourage you and beg you to free yourself of this false belief by looking at reality as often as you can, those confusions can be quite active and intense and seemingly alive within consciousness. And it is those confusions that arise in the midst of self-inquiry that people write to me about. And the fact is that none of those confusions mean a thing. They need not be resolved. They need not be ended. They need not be addressed at all. The actual fact of the matter is, the practical reality of the matter is, that all that ever needs to happen is that you look with all of the determination that you can muster at the reality of what you are, which is permanent, which never changes, which is that presence that you're so familiar with, that you're so familiar with that you overlook in favor of the belief in your life as yourself, in favor of the belief in the drama and storm and wonder and excitement of your life and your mind and your thoughts as yourself. Now, self-inquiry does not ask of you that you as the mind, that your mind, your personal consciousness, the location of all the confusion and all the desire and all the suffering and all the wishing for the end of suffering, it does not require of you that within this arena, the belief that you are not this arena take hold. That's not the point of it. The point of self-inquiry is not that somehow within the mind there arises a deep, fully realized understanding of what reality is and what you are. The mind is not equipped for that to begin with. And it's not required. The purpose of self-inquiry is by is too by the continuing repeated visitation of the underlying presence that is permanently here, that is never absent, that never changes, that is you. The repeated visitation of that by itself, without the need for the mind ever agreeing or disagreeing or having any relationship whatsoever with, by itself, gradually eats away this underlying belief that is the cause of all the trouble. This underlying belief that you are your life, that you are this mind, this cauldron of desire and craving and aversion, and the belief in bondage and the belief in freedom and the belief in all kinds of things. The problem is not a belief that you are any of those things. The problem is the belief that you are the totality of your life. The problem is not your life. It's not that your life is somehow, oh, despicable, to be despised, to be brushed aside, to be dissociated from. The problem is not your life. The problem is the belief that you are your life. Now, in actual fact, it matters not whether you get this or not. It matters not whether that I am effective or ineffective in communicating to you as this mind, as this thinking entity, the essence of the purpose of self-inquiry. This is the good news. It is perfectly possible for the mind to continue in its confusion and its misunderstanding of the purpose of self-inquiry. It is it has no effect if the mind continue to believe that there must be something done about the life, there must be something done about the nature of the cravings and the aversions that come and go within it. That doesn't matter. It's not true, but it doesn't matter if the mind continue to believe it's true, because the ultimate practicality of the inquiry resides in the fact that all that's required is that you look at yourself as often as you can, no matter what you think you're doing, no matter what you think you should be doing or should not be doing. All that's required is that you taste the actual presence of this presence as often as you can. And it is the looking, the tasting, that does the work, and not anything having to do with the understanding or the confusion of the mind about why it is working or why it is not working or why you're doing it or what you should be doing or how you should be fixing yourself or anything else. It's the looking itself that does the job. Nothing need to be done about the mind. But I know that it will be a lot easier on you if I could somehow find the skill to reach this thinking entity that is the mind, this container of thoughts and opinions and judgments and desires and so forth. It would be very useful to you and easier on you if I had the skill to somehow reach that and spark within it the insight that it really doesn't matter what happens there. So I welcome all these emails, and I welcome all these questions about matters that are themselves actually in absolute reality irrelevant. I know from my own experience, because I probably, more than anybody I know, suffered mightily for several years, struggling with what seemed to me to be the important things about what was happening in my mind and my life, struggling mightily even after I discovered self-inquiry with what seemed to be the important things about what I was craving and what I was wanting to do away with, seemed to be the important things about the need to expunge these cravings and aversions. I struggled mightily for a very long time, and it was very unpleasant, and it is very unnecessary. So I would like very much to have the skill to be able to reach into the minds of everybody that I speak to and everybody that is touched by this possibility of the practice of self-inquiry and just make it easier for you. So I welcome the emails. I welcome the questions. I welcome the confusion. I welcome the opportunity for me to learn the skill that's needed to make this whole journey easier, less fraught with the confusion over matters that have no meaning, really, in the end. Here's the deal. This is the deal, stated as clearly and simply as I can possibly manage. The deal is this. The only thing that gives rise to misery and suffering in anyone's life is a false belief that they are that life. The only thing that gives rise to misery and suffering in any life is the false belief that you are that life. Nothing can be done about that false belief within the life, within the mind, within thought, within personal consciousness. There is no understanding that can dawn on you. There is no spiritual experience, no breaking open, no fire of bliss that occurs within this personal consciousness that can rid you of that belief. All that can rid you of that belief is the truth of what you are. Seen directly, without mediation, as often as possible. And once you implement that seeing, nothing that happens within the mind can stop the progress of the elimination of that belief. You just look at yourself as often as you can, and to the best of your ability, pay the mind no mind, and see what happens. But of course, there's nothing to talk about with that. And I am happy to talk about anything you want to talk about. Always, I am happy to talk about anything you want to talk about. But I tell you in advance as warning or as warning, that in the end, I will always come back to this simple, powerful, practical advice. Just look at yourself. You are here. You are present. You have never been absent. Never. You always know that. Just look at this certainty of your presence here. As often as you can, and everything will turn out right in the end. I received an email from Saba, who is, I hope, here today, in response to the need to email rather than do text messages with the questions that come to your mind here in these satsangs. And she asked me, she says to me this, I saw a clip of one of your talks on YouTube a while ago where somebody asked you to speak about the self with the big S and different selves, etc. You answered by saying, it's all made up. is only one self, and proceeded to speak about the fact that there are no two selves anywhere to be found. Could you please speak more about this? What makes it seem otherwise? What makes us forget that I am only one? And then, what makes us lose sight of the fact that we have forgotten that and go on with our lives as if our unhappiness has something to do with our life situation? Well, the thing about there being no two selves, no, what would I say, the no two selves anywhere to be found is self-evident. And it's the whole, it's at the heart of the inquiry. If you look for self, not look for the apparitions that appear within your personal consciousness and project upon them the idea of self, but if you look for the reality of self, what is self? What is it? What does it feel like? Where is it to be found? You will find yourself utterly unable to find anything other than you. Anywhere. Anything other than you. Not even so much as your own life, the small self that people are fond of talking about. There's no self there. That's not where self is found. Self is found at the heart of the matter, at the permanent presence that is unmoving, unchanged, unaffected, unhurt, unharmed by any circumstance whatsoever. Self is at the heart of the matter. Self is this eternal presence that is never absent. And it's not to be found within the life or within any idea of small self or ego or any such thing. Self is you. It's you, just as you are. Here, just as you are. As to what makes it seem otherwise, who knows? I could tell a story about it. There's been a lot of stories told about it, about the perversion of the mind and its attempts to run away from the truth and all of that. But they're just stories. The thing that is most important to remember is that, and to see if this is not true, you see, one thing I really want to make clear always, and I often forget, I think, to say this, and that is that I am not telling you something that I think that you should believe or that you should take my word for. I'm never saying that. See if this is not true. What makes us forget that I am only one? Who cares? Really? What makes us lose sight of the fact that we have forgotten that and go on with our lives as if our unhappiness is something to do with our life situation? What is the problem with that? Really? Are you affected by it? Does it prevent you from doing the inquiry when it occurs to you? Clearly, it's not always the case, because if it were always the case, you would be unable even to ask the question. When it's not the case, look and see what you are. The time that you spend seemingly lost in the story of your life is beside the point. It has no consequence. It has no effect on anything anywhere. The time that has consequence and that has effect is the time that you spend, no matter how brief, no matter how fleeting, looking at reality. So the discussion, any discussion that is entered into seeking to answer questions such as what makes it seem otherwise, or what makes us forget that I am only one, or what makes us lose sight of the fact that we have forgotten, these questions can be quite interesting and quite entertaining and diverting, but they have no value to you. They are dialogues taking place in thought, about thought, and have no effect on anything. what these questions are, the value of these questions can be in the fact of their arising. From whence do they arise? Are you hurt by this? Really? Is it of any, does it have any effect on you that the fact of what you really are is forgotten within the mind? Really? That's the question. And the only way to answer that is to look and see. Look at what you are. Look at this presence. Is it changed by that? Is it touched by that? In the midst of all the confusion, are you not still the same? Look and see. Always look and see. So, none of this has anything to do with the idea. Nothing that happens within the mind is a problem, you see. Nothing. The confusion, the forgetting, the remembering, the seeming that there is separation. What's the problem with that? Really? For whom is it a problem? Who does it affect? Who does it harm? Look and see. Look at yourself. See if you're changed, if you're touched, if you're helped or hurt by anything that takes place within the mind. Look and see. And let me know. So I take it for granted that anything that we discuss here today will be discussions about confusions that arise within the mind. And I take it for granted that I will not be very good at resolving them, but I hope that you will bear with me and help me get more skillful and better at resolving these questions within the mind. They have no meaning, really. They have no consequence or effect, really. But I tell you from my own experience that it can be a lot easier on you if we can resolve these issues. So, talk to me. I'm here. I'm happy to be here.
We have Dwani calling from Milan, Italy. Dwani, you can speak now.
Hello? Hello? Can you hear me?
Hello, Dwani. It's a pleasure to hear you. I hear you very well.
Hello,
John. Can you hear me?
With a delay, but I do.
Hello, John.
Can you hear me?
With a delay, but I do.
Okay.
I have two questions, John. One is, I became aware that actually I have no questions and that asking anything is a way for me to be related to you. And this relation is important for me because it is what makes me go on in self-inquiry. The second thing is that I have been spending some time with my mom, and she's an Alzheimer's patient, and I had the experience of what a gift is self-inquiry, and I wonder if I really have to accept the fact that I cannot share it with her.
Well, regarding the fact of the relationship with me, I am very happy to be in relationship with you, Dwani, and I am very happy if our relationship in some way encourages you and causes you to continue this practice, and I'm really happy to hear that it's been useful to you. As far as accepting the fact that you can't share the inquiry with your mother who has Alzheimer's, who says you can't? I mean, I have actually no experience being around people who are afflicted with that disease, but no one knows. No one can know what is heard by any mind, no matter what the apparent response and reaction to circumstance may be. No one can know that. And the fact is that your mother, like you, like all others, already, always knows what's real. Your mother already, always is seeing what's real. So there's no basis for saying that you can't share self-inquiry with your mother other than an assumption that that it can't be heard by her. But to me, that assumption is false. I have never come across anyone who can't hear the invitation to taste the reality of what they are. And there's no reason for making that assumption. Speak to her. Be with her. She already knows what you're trying to point her to, so who's to say she can't hear you? Because she responds differently or doesn't respond? That really is beside the point. Okay?
Thank you, John. Thank you. My thoughts come to you many, many times.
And I welcome them always. Thank you, Dewani.
Child.
Speak to me anytime.
Now we have George in Ashland, Oregon. George, you can speak now.
Okay. Hi, John. Can you hear me?
Hi, George. What a pleasure. I can,
yeah,
indeed.
It's good to finally speak to you in one of these satsangs. This is a wonderful thing you're doing, so thank you.
It's my pleasure.
Okay, so my question that I want to bring forward, if it is a question, has to do with the mind and the apparent role that it seems to play in self-inquiry. The mind, to me, it seems that the mind builds a conceptual model of how things are, and which is not reality, but it's a conceptual model. And that some of these concepts, however, seem to point to very spurious things that are easily doubted. Others point to experiences that resonate, seem to resonate with the truth. Things that you hear from a teacher, from yourself, or from some scripture, you read it, and there's a ring of truth. And these kinds of concepts seem to guide the mind toward a different belief system, which, I don't know, apparently is more in line with reality, but it's still doubtful. But then there's this other concept that comes as a result of direct experience of truth, such as the experience of the essential nature, of awareness being your essential nature. And this is a concept, but it seems to be a live concept. It's not dead. I mean, the concept is not the truth. But what it points to is true because every time you exercise that self-inquiry, which you are labeling in your mind with a concept, But every time you, you exercise that inquiry, there's that fresh, brand new, never before experienced happening of awareness, which is true somehow. So anyway, my question has to do with the role of the mind in this whole process, if any. Recognizing, and I'll end up my question very quickly here now, recognizing that none of these concepts coming can be totally trusted. It seems we hang out with teachers because there's a good feeling of resonance with the things they're saying. But history shows that this happened with Jesus and Buddha, and but it also happened with Jim Jones, and there are probably people sitting around listening to George W. Bush right now and just feeling really good that he's confirming the belief structure that's in their mind. So I can't even be sure. I can't be sure that sitting around in satsang with you has anything to do with reality.
I can't be sure that sitting around in satsang with you.
But here I am, and this is if this is a confusion of mind,
but here
if
I
you
am.
Can say anything and about it, I'd welcome to hear about it.
Well, that's quite a mouthful, George. Here's the thing. What's the role of mind in self-inquiry? The role of mind in self-inquiry is to direct attention toward the ever-present reality. Any, you know, spinning of concepts and insights and belief systems and so forth that result in the directing of attention toward reality is useful. I'm not so sure that any concepts or thoughts or belief systems actually have that effect, but if they do, then they're useful to that extent. But here's the thing, George. If you believe that you are awareness, you will suffer. If you hold to any belief whatsoever about what you are, you will suffer. The point of self-inquiry is not to substitute a new belief about what you are for all your old beliefs about what you are, but to destroy all beliefs about what you are. And that, of course, is not something that can happen within the mind, because the mind itself is a belief about what you are. So the point of self-inquiry is to destroy any belief about what you are, and instead to see reality as it is, as it has always been, and as you have always been seeing. Now, the fact is that just as there may well be nothing whatsoever that happens within the mind that's of any use or any value in self-inquiry, I tell you also that there's nothing whatsoever that happens within the mind that is in any way hurtful or prevents you from self-inquiry. In other words, there's nothing that happens within the mind at all that has any effect on you at all. Nothing. And the way for you to see whether that's true or not is not by chewing on it with spiritual or philosophical reflection. I'm not saying that spiritual and philosophical reflection are bad. They are not bad at all. But the way to resolve this question and the way to see whether what I'm saying is true or not is to look and see, are you changed? What am I, really? And what is it that is always here and always the same? And is this changed by any concepts of mind, by the presence of any confusion, by the absence of any confusion? Is this not always as it has always been? Now, that's self-inquiry. And it's that. The desire, the urge, the impulse to look there, whether it is to confirm or deny the effectiveness of things that occur in the mind, or whether it is merely to see the truth of what you are, it's the urge to look there that does the work. Nothing that the mind thinks about it is of any consequence. That's my experience. That's the experience of many people that I've spoken to. But if you believe that, you will also suffer. The thing that sets true, pure self-inquiry apart from all the other spiritual endeavors and aspirations and the utterances of spiritual people is that it is something that you must do for yourself. No one can do it for you. No one can even tell you where to look. No one can give you the experience of the reality of what you are. No one can take that experience away from you. So the essence of self-inquiry is that you must look for yourself. See for yourself if this is true. Now, you are, I think, astute to see that the triggering of experiences of feeling really good, of feeling grounded and aware and clear and on the right track and all of those things that can come in the presence of teachers or in the presence of eloquent politicians or in the presence of actors for that matter, movies for that matter, that these experiences are not to be trusted, but they're not bad. You know, they just don't do you any good in the essential point of your life, which is to see what you have always been seeing and to know what you have always been knowing, which is this reality of what you are. And by so doing, to be finished with all the false ideas of what you are and all the false ideas that anything that happens in your mind needs to have anything done about it. Is that at all helpful?
Yes. Yeah. I guess I totally get that because I know that directing the mind in the way that you have spoken and you have, and thanks to my association with you, this has come clear, I know, but it seems like the mind is clear. It seems like the mind says, hey, that's self-inquiry is a good thing, even though self-inquiry as such is a concept. Because I know, I mean, my own personal experience is that that particular concept points to silence, the absolute cessation of other mental activity and conceptualization. In other words, it's a concept that kills concepts.
Well, it is an action that kills action. It is, and that's the fact of the matter. It's also the fact of the matter that you just have to stop before the because. The fact of the matter is that self-inquiry makes life easier. That's a fact. Self-inquiry washes away the presence of misery and suffering in the life without needing to do away with pain and hardship. That's the point of self-inquiry. The destruction of the false belief that you are your life, your mind, your consciousness, and so forth, the result of that is that life reveals itself to be not a problem, really. And then new concepts can arise as to the because of all of that, but they're beside the point. You know, it's really possible for you now just to relax into your life. You don't need to know why. You don't need to know any of that. Life is easy in the absence of this despicable belief. Life is easy. And the because is just, you know, more, it's not a problem. It doesn't hurt anything, but it's just unnecessary. But yeah, I mean, why would you do self-inquiry unless it was to make your life better, to make you easier and happier. in life. Life isn't the problem. That's the point. Okay?
Yep. That sounds right to me. Okay, thanks, John.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay,
thanks, John.
You're very welcome, George. Thank you.
Now we have Annie calling from Australia. Annie?
Hi, John. Hi, John. Can you hear
me?
Hi,
Annie.
Hi, John.
Hi, Annie. Well, nice. How wonderful to hear your voice.
Can you hear me? Yours too, and I'm hearing it twice because there's some kind of feedback thing happening. So, John, I just wanted to say thank you so much for saying the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah, well, you're very welcome. It's very fortunate that that works, because I don't seem to be able to do anything else.
The other thing I wanted to say is that thank you so much for your patience, and that you're just such a wonderful example, just as you are.
Well, you're welcome. Whatever you perceive to be my role, if it does this job, you're very welcome. I'm very happy to be that for you, patient and so forth. There are those who might disagree with you, but
Is there anything more? Yes, I just wanted to say that I really have very little to say. I'm experiencing a lot of love and peace, and it's just great to be continually reminded that it's not about those sensations. It's about, like, okay, how is it that I know these sensations?
Actually, it's not about that either, Annie. The thing that is really important for you to see, it's important for everybody to see, that the experiences of love and peace, if they are new and fresh, and as they almost always are when they arise in these contexts, if they are new and fresh, then they will surely become old and stale and disappear. What we want, the truth of what we want, although we have taught ourselves and we have been conditioned, and even maybe especially within the spiritual arena, we have had these conditionings confirmed, that what we want are these experiences of love and peace and open-heartedness and so forth, that displace the experiences of closed and contracted and alone and denied and so forth. And of course it is this that has led us on our lifelong quest to get rid of the bad experiences and hold on to the good experiences. And that impulse and that inclination on the part of the mind to do so is endlessly confirmed and encouraged confirmed and encouraged, not only within the culture, but also within the spiritual arena. But the truth is that what we really want is the truth. That's really what we're after. We spend our lives craving identity, something to be that is satisfactory and fulfilling and final. And so too in the spiritual realm as well as in the cultural realm, this craving for identity is encouraged and confirmed endlessly, again and again. But what we really want is the truth, and which does not mean that the truth precludes the alternating experiences of love and open-heartedness and contraction and separation and so forth. Nothing needs to be done about any of that. But what we really want is the truth. And the truth is this underlying, unmoving, absolutely certain presence that you are, about which nothing really can be said, but which is always, always in your consciousness, no matter whether you are ignoring it or involved in the drama and the excitement of the things that occur in the mind, the experiences, the thoughts, and all of that, or not. You are always, always conscious of this background presence that is never absent and never changes and is unaffected by any of it. So what we want is the truth. And the way to get what we want is to look at this presence as often as we possibly can. And that rids us of the false belief that we are the one wanting this truth. Because we are not. Do you hear that?
Yeah, I do. And I find what you direct me to do, and I'm doing it while you're speaking. It's just immensely satisfying.
I'm very happy to hear that. Could you give us 1 minute here? We have to. Carla has to do something. Pause just a minute, and then I'll be back with you. Okay?
No worries.
Okay, I'm back. I also have to say that apparently Carla has just told me that the problem with the feedback on your speakers might be my fault, that I need to release my talk button when I'm not speaking rather than the other way around. So I'm going to do so, and you can continue with whatever it is that you want to say to me now. I'm really happy to hear from you, Annie, and I'm really happy about your willingness and your enthusiasm about this practice.
Yeah, thanks, John. That's better. I'm not hearing myself anymore. That was disconcerting. So, yeah, John, it's just thank you so much, and just just thank you. I just don't have anything else to say. So, bye for now.
You're very welcome, and bye for now yourself. Be well.
Catherine in New Zealand, you can speak now.
Hello, John. Can you hear me?
I can hear you very well, Catherine, and I'm happy to do so, too.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, Catherine, I can. What can I do for
okay.
you?
Okay.
I can hear you now. What can I do for you?
So things are going quite well. We're meeting once a week, four of us or more, and it really helps to be with other people who have the same interest. And it's interesting to see how different it is for each of us as well, that it's not the same, the difficulties or the ease of doing self-inquiry. I'm reminded often to do self-inquiry, but what I wanted to speak to you about is that is the doubt in me that I'm actually doing it, because it just seems so mental. You know, I do ask myself how I know I'm here, but it always seems I know I'm here because of that voice in my head going, there doesn't seem to be a break from it, and I just wonder, am I actually doing it? I keep doing it because you said to keep doing it, but the doubt gets really strong.
Okay, well, let me ask you right now. Well, first of all, let me say this. There is no particular formula that, like a mantra or a ritualistic practice, that comprises self-inquiry. The point of self-inquiry is to taste yourself. And I have, in the past, I have encouraged people to look and see whether it is true that they are here, that they are not absent. But it is, as you suspect, it's not the question itself that is the inquiry. The question is intended to bring your attention to this underlying presence that you are. Now, and you're right when you say that it's becoming kind of mental for you, because the question is, am I here? How do I know I am here? And the answer is, I know I am here because I hear this question repeating in my mind and so forth. And that's not what I'm wanting you to do. What I want you to do is see if it is not so, that underlying it all, there is a presence, a sense of being that is never absent and has always been the same, that you have certainly not always attended to, but that you have certainly always been aware of. Sometimes it's been the forefront of your awareness, and sometimes not so. There's a feeling of you present that is behind it all, that is underlying it all. There is a certainty that you exist that has nothing to do with whether anything is going on or not going on, whether any thoughts are playing or not playing. There is this certainty that you're here that is certain even when there is no question being asked, this conviction that you are present, that you are not absent, and that is here no matter what you are hearing, no matter what thoughts are going on, or even when no thoughts are going on at all. That's what I want you to look at. Can you see what I'm asking of you?
I know what you're asking, and somehow, I think because my mind is strong, you know, I've got a strong mind, it's so distracting that, and the thoughts are all about not being sure whether I know what you're talking, you know, whether this is what you're talking about. And what I have noticed in the group is that sometimes when I've just kind of dropped into being there and the sort of joy of being there, there is this sense of being where even my body and my speaking is like an object to me. Is that it?
That's exactly it. Not the description of it, but it's clear that what you're describing is reality. And it is true that your body, your thoughts, your mind are an object to you. That is the case. So that's exactly it. And all that's required of you in the inquiry is to move your attention there whenever it occurs to you to do so, by whatever means that happens, by whatever means you can make that occur. And it doesn't have to be like all the time. Just whenever you can, whenever it occurs to you to do so, bring your attention to taste that you just described to me.
Well, John, that doesn't happen when I'm on my own. That happens when I'm with other people. Somehow something relaxes, I think, and I can't seem to get the sense when I'm on my own. Does it matter, or do I just keep going with it and hoping, or do you think that in some way because it happens with other people without me trying at all. I'm not trying to do anything. there's just suddenly this sense of a voice coming out of my mouth, and but I'm not. It's really odd, but it's lovely. But on my own, I don't ever experience that, not in that way anyway. So it's sort of much more mental on my own. Is there anything I could do that might help?
Well, one thing I want to clarify here, and that is that there's a difference between the state of mind that results that you're speaking of, in which it is your, in which the there is this feeling of speech just uttering itself and so forth. That's a state of mind. There's a difference between that state of mind and the reality that underlies it. That state of mind can come and go, but the reality that underlies it never moves. So that state of mind, if it is encouraged in the presence of the people that you're meeting with there where you are, then by all means encourage it and continue your meetings. But when that state of mind presents itself, stop for just a second and look and see if there is not a presence here that is the same, whether that state of mind is present or not. That's one thing. Look and see when that state of mind appears, if there is not an underlying reality that has nothing to do with that state of mind. That state of mind is a simulation. The other thing is that whether you're with people or not, remember what we're talking about here today, and remember that I have agreed with you that what you're calling self-inquiry is mostly mental, and what you're looking for is something that is prior to those thoughts, that is present all the time, that is the same now as it was when you were three. Remember that and think about it. I mean, really try. Really try to see if you can find that. One of the things about self-inquiry that distinguishes it from so many other spiritual preachings is that there are so many who tell you that there's nothing you can do, that if it happens to you, it happens to you, and so forth and so on. With self-inquiry, you can try. You can think about it. Think about it all the time. Think about it whenever you can. Try to get the taste of what it is that I am pointing you to. And you will. I promise you from my heart that you will. And it is the effort to see what's real that does the work. And for some, the seeing happens very quickly. And even the eradication of the false belief happens very quickly. For others, perhaps like you, certainly like me, for others it takes quite some time even to get a sense of what it is I'm looking for. That was my experience. But keep trying. Remember what we spoke about and keep trying. And when these gifts appear, the states appear in which there is this sense of speech uttering itself and actions and thoughts appearing on their own without any connection with you, when there are these states that appear as great gifts, stop in the midst of them and see if you cannot find underneath of them this permanent presence, this permanent reality, and see if it's not the case that you have always been seeing this. Do you follow me?
I think so. Are you saying that that's a state because it comes and goes? Is that how you know it's a state? Because it sort of feels as if I'm just there, and not only the other people out there are just happening, but I'm also just happening, but I'm kind of behind it all, seeing it all. So I know that that's a state because it's not always like that. Is that what you mean?
Yes, that's how you can tell. If something appears, no matter how, and I cannot emphasize enough how great a gift this particular state is that it's come to you, how really close to reality it is. But the state is seeing it as in this way. And the way always that you can tell, you're absolutely correct, the way always that you can tell that something is a state rather than reality is because there was a time when it is not here, and then there is a time when it is here, and then there is a time when it is not here again. Reality never departs. Reality is never absent. The states are. But this is a wondrous gift. Don't trivialize it. It is a great gift. And it is an opportunity in those moments to look and see what has never been missing, no matter what state is present, whether it is this sweet state that you describe, this sweetness that you describe, or states of strong mind and caught in thought and contracted and unable to break free. You are here permanently. And once you see what it is that I am referring to, you will recognize it immediately. You are always here. You're never absent. And the truth of the matter is that there's never been a moment when you have not seen that. Never. So, I'm happy for this conversation. Is it helpful to you so far?
It is, John. I'm just, you know, because I don't actually know what reality is at this point, it feels as if that experience that I was having, you know, that feels so much less personal than anything I've experienced before. But what you're saying, to me, it's like when I do experience reality, I'll know it, and I'll know it's always been here. That it will be unquestionable, and that's what I'm hearing you saying. And even though I've been months at this, I still hear you saying that, you know, to keep going. And the other thing I just wonder is, when I'm looking for reality, I keep wondering what it is that's looking. Is it reality itself, or is it the mind?
Yes, it's always reality that's looking. Always.
Or is it the mind?
It's always reality. Reality is all that... When you're looking for reality, it is the mind. That's the truth. But that which sees, you know, the ground from which you can report that you are looking for reality is reality. Do you follow that?
No, I didn't follow that, John.
Well, here you are looking for reality. And you know you're looking for reality. But what sees all of that?
I think I got the tiniest glimpse just then, that it sort of, you know, came and went like a flash.
That's it. And it will come and go like a flash, but you will return to it again and again. I promise you that. This is very good news. Is there anything else?
Yeah, thank you, John. There was just one other thing. When you say you just as you are, you don't mean including the mind and the emotions and everything, do you? Do you mean reality?
When I say you just as you are, it is all inclusive. You will see what I mean by that. It goes to the truth that there is nothing that needs to be changed about the mind. The mind doesn't have to be made to be loosened up, to be opened, to be changed in any way. It doesn't need to be kept from changing in any way. When I say you, just as you are, I mean the totality of it. The truth is there's nothing but you. the reality that underlies it all, in which everything whatsoever lives and moves and has its being, and the everything whatsoever that lives and moves and has its being is needs nothing done about any of it. And the eradication of the false belief that leads to the conviction that something needs to be done about it, the eradication of that false belief somehow mysteriously removes that which needs something done about it. I know that might seem a little, a little mysterious, but it's not so. You'll see. You keep looking at this. You keep looking for this that you had just a flash of, this reality that sees it all, in which all of it appears. And you'll see that just as you are, really, life, mind, thought, sense of separation, sense of oneness, sense of needing, sense of not needing, just as you are, all of it. Nothing needs to be done about any of it, really. The only aspect that it's useful to do something about is this underlying lie that you are this limited life. The life itself is perfect. Perfect. And even if that underlying lie remains, even if no one ever sees reality, reality is as it is. You are as you are. The point of seeking the truth, the point of seeking the truth is to love life just as it is. So yeah, I mean it all. You, just as you are. Really. Okay.
Well, thank you so much, John. I think I just needed some encouragement because it seemed such a long time, and I wonder if I, you know, if I was doing something wrong, but I'll just carry on. And thank you so much for all your encouragement. It makes all the difference that you're actually available to us, that we can sort of bounce off of you and get a deeper sense and keep going. So thank you, and thank you, Carla. And goodbye for now.
Goodbye. I'm very happy. You know, the thing is about the being available and meeting with all of you like this, the thing of it is that the truth is that we're all in this together. There's this whole idea that there is a personal enlightenment, that there is the possibility that in an individual human life, in an individual human mind, that life and that mind can be totally free of any concern for anything that happens. That's just a lie. We are all in this together. There are not two selves. There are not two minds. And I am just immensely grateful to be your servant in this, to be useful to you in this way. And I will be so for as long as I have breath to do so. So you're very welcome.
Tobias, calling from France. Tobias, you can speak now.
Yes, hello, John. Hello, John.
Hello, Tobias. What a treat to hear your voice.
Yes. John,
hello,
I have a short question only. Yes, I can hear you, John. My question is, this awareness, I feel, it now turns like to be aware sleeping. So I just wanted to ask you if this is right.
Yes, of course awareness is present when you're sleeping. Where would it go? How could it not be
no,
present? How else would you know that
I mean,
you had been sleeping?
Also, in daytime, you know, now there is somehow a turn. It feels like this awareness is aware, but somehow sleeping, you know, behind all this things going on in the mind.
I think you have to tell me what you mean by sleeping.
You know, if there is a situation...
What is it you're describing as sleeping?
Yes, if there is a situation that might hurt or something like that, it is like one just can let oneself fall back, you know, into this awareness of being. And, you know, and the sleeping is maybe the aspect, it isn't hurt by this, you know, what is happening. And this gives always the possibility just to let fall into.
Yes, that's certainly my experience. The truth is that awareness, which is a word that we sometimes use to denote reality, the truth is that reality or awareness or whatever word we use to denote it is neither hurt nor helped by anything that happens in circumstance. And the truth is that awareness or reality or whatever word we use is, you know, sometimes we speak about love, Tobias. It is a great thing in spiritual circles to talk about love, love without condition, eternal love, compassion, and so forth. But the truth is that the love that is awareness just doesn't care, and which is to say that the love that is awareness cares not upon what its light shines and is absolutely untouched by anything whatsoever. So surely it is always possible, and although I wouldn't say fall back because you really can't leave yourself, but it is always possible to relax into this certainty, this light, this liveliness that doesn't change and that is unhurt and unhelped by anything whatsoever that happens in circumstance. Is that what you're speaking about?
Yes, but it's I have always problems, you know, in the spiritual arena with this love and all these things. It is even, I wouldn't say love, I would say it's like, this is also what I wanted to say somehow with sleeping. It is still, you know, it is stillness. It is, I think, you know, this emotional side, if it is pain or love or joy, that is also more than this stillness, you know. That's what I mean also with this sleeping or this, it's difficult to describe.
I think we're talking about the same thing, and what I'm saying is that what is described in spiritual utterance as love is precisely this stillness, this absolute non-reactivity to anything, the neither hurt nor helped by any of it, the unmoving, non-reactive stillness that is reality. But there's, of course, once we, the longer we talk about it, the less meaning what we have to say has. And the key is to look at it. Not so much to talk about it, but to look at it. But I think you're absolutely right. I agree with you 100%. It is this stillness, this non-reactivity, this absence of relationship to things.
Yes,
this,
and that is...
Yeah. Okay?
Okay, John, that was all. I only wanted to have a short question. I leave you now alone again.
Okay.
Okay, John, thank you very much. Bye.
Okay, my friend, it's wonderful to speak with you.
Okay, John, thank you very much.
Right. Now we have Derek calling from Ireland. Derek, you can speak now.
Hello. Hi, John, can you hear me?
Hello, Derek. It's good to hear you.
It's good to be here, John.
I can hear you very well.
Great, great. As I was here, I thought I'd give you a quick report of what's been going on for me. I suppose the last few weeks, it seems kind of strange to, I've always felt a kind of a sense of guilt for, you know, things that would come up in my head or feel like, you know, somehow I'm in control of what actually arises in me. But for some reason, it's probably related to doing self-inquiry, the feeling, the sense that I'm doing any of it has almost left me, you know. It's like there's still fear there, there's still sadness there, there's still happiness there, there's all the usual stuff, but for some reason it just feels like I'm not in control of any of it, so who cares, why get involved in it, you know? And it feels really nice. It's just such a relief, and I'm kind of reluctant to talk about it from the sense that, you know, you're talking about things coming and going, and obviously it wasn't there before, and now it's here, but at the same time, I just wanted to say it because it's really nice, you know? So, there you go.
Yes, the relief is immense, and you have to see that what you're describing is not so much a new thing as the something else has left. What is left is the sense of being at stake in this life, a sense of having something to say about what thoughts are thunk and what emotions come and go and what happens and what you do and what you don't do. And that's something that has departed. It was here, and now it is no longer here, and you remain as you have always been. And the life is at ease in the absence of this pernicious belief that there's something at stake in it.
But it's almost like, and I don't know if this is anybody else's experience or your own, but it's like, it's almost as if I don't really care about self-inquiry either. It just seems like when I stop looking for what's there, I just presented by this certainty that you're talking about. It just makes complete sense to me. I mean, as other people were talking about there, I've had lots of glimpses of this type of thing, but it's like once I've stopped all the other stuff of, you know, trying to control thoughts and judging thoughts coming in, not even me trying to do it, just looking at it and going, all right, okay, fair enough. There's another thought coming in. Just kind of like, it just creates that space. I don't know if that makes sense. It's just in the absence of that kind of searching or even in the absence of self-inquiry, what I am is just blatantly obvious. It's just there, you know?
Yes, blatantly obvious. And this is what all of those who have spoken about this mean when they speak about the fact that what you are trying to see, not you now so much, but what you are trying to see, you have always already been seeing. So that in the absence of this underlying belief that gets eradicated as the result of the really energetic attempt to see what's real, when that belief is gone, you still are already always seeing what you've always seen. There's nothing special about it. There really is nothing special about it. The specialness is the idea that you are at stake in this life. And when that's gone, there's nothing special about any of it. It is all just quite a miracle, really, that you should be seeing through these eyes and speaking through this tongue and hearing through these ears and seeing thoughts come and go. It just is as it is, as it has always been. And does that make sense?
It does, but the funny thing about it is, if you'd said that to me 6 months ago or a year ago, it would just make no sense to me. It's like, I mean, I started doing this thing maybe about a year ago. I probably heard you about a year ago first, but you just seemed so passionate and certain about it that it really inspired me to do it. But at the same time, doing it, I really didn't know what the hell you were talking about. I had deep senses of peace and bliss and that type of thing before, but it was like, what the hell is he talking about? But it's really only in, this is my experience of doing it, that it's like, I'm like literally sitting for 6-7 hours at a time just looking at this thing, what the hell is he talking about? I need to know what he's on about. It's like, I became so, this really strong searching got so just strong, and it's like it was going nowhere. It just had to stop. It's like, this is getting me nowhere. It's going nowhere. I'm never going to see this type of thing. So just when you stop, it's just, oh yeah, there it is. I don't know if that makes sense or if that advocates what you're trying to say, but that's my experience. And it's like, even when this desperate search is going on, it doesn't really do it. It's just when suddenly you got to go, oh yeah, I'm not going to, this is getting me nowhere. Then suddenly there's just this space, and then suddenly there's the realization or this kind of knowing that you're talking about. Oh yeah, I'm still here, I'm exactly the same. And you just kind of rest in that, you know, and what you're saying, that yeah, that was always there even when you were going crazy looking, trying to find it, like a lunatic, what was already there, which is, sounds ridiculous, but there you go. That, yeah, does that make sense?
That's absolutely wonderful. Everybody needs to hear this, Derek. That's exactly what I'm saying. And that's exactly what I'm saying when I encourage people to do this energetically, to try with all your heart to, it's the looking that does the work, really. It is this energetic looking that does the work. And your experience is exactly my experience. It's exactly my experience. Everybody needs to hear this report from me. And it's really true that this assertion that always, always this has been the case is unhearable when the mind is caught in the desperate need to make things right. And seems that the only thing that I have found, well, I'm sure the only thing that I have found, and it may be the only thing that works, is to try with all your heart to see what's real. And keep trying, no matter how hard it is. Keep trying. And in the end, it's over, as it has always been. This is a great report, Derek. Thank you so much for this.
Well, thanks a million, John. I'm very happy to be here and talking with you about it. It all seems so kind of ridiculous, but at the same time, it seems to be working, so thank you. I'll keep it up. I don't even feel like keeping it up. It just seems so blatantly obvious what it is that I don't need to do anything anymore. It's just there. So you're like, okay, you know, I had all these ideas of going back and doing more meditation and going back to Buddhist centers for 10-day retreats and stuff. But I'm just like, yeah, if I do, I do. If I don't, I don't. It doesn't seem to make much difference, you know. Or even the idea that, oh, nice, when I feel I'm more enlightened now, it seems to have kind of, you know, gone away, or I don't care. Anyway. Thanks a million. Best of luck.
That's all exactly right. Exactly right. If you do, you do, and if you don't, you don't, and who cares? And I'm so thankful to hear this from you. It's exactly what I'm saying. And so thank you. And we'll move along now. Keep in touch with me, Derek. Let me know how you're doing over time.
I will. Thanks, John.
Nigel calling from Madrid.
Hi, John.
Hello, Nigel. What a pleasure.
It's a pleasure to be back, my friend, my beautiful friend. It's so beautiful what we're talking about and what I'm hearing. This has a value beyond all these petty little problems. No, I've just noticed that there have been a few people who've come in with questions and expressed their doubts, and I just want to encourage them. I just want to say to them that the mind is always looking for security, and it always wants to know. It always thinks it can know, and this is unknowable. You just carry on with the practice, and it will come. And it is true. I mean, you promise it, and it's true. You start to see it. You cannot know this with the mind. You can never ever find security in this. You just have to have some sort of unshakable faith in this practice, and it all works out. And it's just as simple as that. And really, that's all I have to say. See, I know it's getting late now, and a lot of people are getting ready to bed, so I'm just going to say I love you loads, John, and thanks for everything.
I love you too, Nigel, and what you say is absolutely true. And the amazing thing, you know, is that what one may finally come to see is that if you do the practice, if you stick with the practice over time, since it is the case, this is my claim, this is verifiable, since it is the case that what you have always wanted is the truth, and not any of these passing phenomena. Since that is the case, once you start looking for the real, you will return to it again and again without regard to the mind's nattering about what you're doing or what you're not doing or whether it's effective or whether it's ineffective, because underlying it all is the silent recognition that what you've always wanted is the truth. And it is absolutely the case, of course, that nothing can be said about reality. Nothing. That's why it is not a matter that the mind can take and keep for its own. But this is what you've always wanted. And once the practice starts, I guarantee you, it'll continue without regard to all the mind's carping and nattering and confusion about it. So thank you, Nigel. I agree with you. And everybody needs to hear these reports from people like you and Derek and the others who have been in the practice for some time to see that it works. It's the only thing that works. Nothing else works. Thank you.
Vivek, calling from Cupertino in California.
Hello, Vivek. You'll be the last one. I'm happy to see you here.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can now. I hear you very well.
Okay, I think I had my microphone volume too low. Okay, fix that. I wanted to say that having practiced this self-inquiry in some form for 10 months, I'm still very much in the grip of the false belief. But I'm happy to say that I finally understand what you meant when you said, I'm here.
Uh-huh. Well, I hope that's good news. I wonder who it is that's in the grip of this false belief, but I am glad that you understand what I meant by I am here. Would you like to say more about that? Would you like some more, you know, discussion of this?
Yes, I'd actually like to tell people about my experience of it, which was after listening to your podcast, you know, again and again for hundreds of hours for maybe 10 months and looking and trying to see who was looking and so on. I think what I realized was when you said it's easy and it's always here, and then I said maybe I'm doing too much. And then when I thought about that, it's supposed to be easy, I suddenly feel like I got it. And it's almost like when you get a joke that somebody is telling, you know, you say, oh, that's what he meant. And it really was easy, and it was something that I knew, and it's very ordinary. That's what it felt like.
Well, that's very good news, because it is easy and it is very ordinary. And it's also the case that, and having said that, I'm flabbergasted that you would say that you're still in the grip of any belief at all. But it's also the case that so long as there is this underlying sense of fear and anxiety that drives the need to do something about the thoughts and the life and the what I do and what I think and what I am and what I should be and all of that, so long as that's in play and seems real, it's not easy. It's only easy when it's easy. It's easy because it is, as you say, always here, always present. And I don't remember what else you said, but whatever it was, it rang really true to me, so go on.
Yeah, I feel like I know what I need to do now. I mean, or do or do not do, whatever that is. I still experience fear and anger, so all that is there, but I'm here with the anger and I'm here with the fear. I always was, you know, even when I wasn't thinking about it. And it was just like everybody else said, that I needed to do all that work and that trying and that, you know, it's almost like learning to ride a bicycle. You fall this way, you fall that way. And then suddenly you say, oh, okay, so this is what I need to do. And I think I'm still in the grip of the belief that I am this story and this person, but I know what I need to look at now. And
excellent.
That's my report.
Very good news. That's exactly right. Is there anything else?
That's my report.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I love that metaphor of, because I remember when I was a kid and trying to ride a bicycle, how hard it was, but it really isn't. It's only hard when it's hard. And once you get it, it's easy. That's excellent. Now you know what you're looking at or what you're looking for. And I promise you, it's over. Really. Just keep up the practice. Just stay with it. Look at yourself whenever you can. And
yes, that's what I'm going to keep doing. And thank you for, as someone else said earlier, thank you for telling us again and again. Thank you for telling us and repeating again and again that we should do it.
And, you're very welcome. I mean that from my heart. You're all very welcome. It's really true what I say. It's one thing that is more and more apparent to me as time goes on in this really kind of bizarre role, is that we're in this together. We are not separate. There's no separate personal liberation available for me. There's no separate personal freedom that's available for any. We are all in this together. And it is finally, in the end, it is the joy of life to bring this to the world, to bring this to the rest of humanity. And I mean, the little that I do is little indeed, and nowhere near what I would like to do. But there's nothing else for me except to speak with you about this. There's nothing else for me except to repeat to myself the truth. To repeat to myself the absolute unending availability of ease and quiet and beauty. The absolute availability of the eternal reality that we are. We all are. We are the same. We are one being, one self, one reality, one awareness, not two, not ever two. So for as long as I have breath, what I will do with this breath, so far as I can tell, is expended in this futile effort to speak something true about that that nothing can be said about. And the useful effort to encourage all I come upon to just take a second right now, stop for just a second, no matter what's happening in the mind, and direct your attention to this underlying presence and see if it is not the case. It's very important for you to hear this. See for yourself if it is not the case that this that you are is always here and never changes. Is untouched, unmoved, unhurt, and unhelped by any circumstance. And the point of that is to see what you are. And the point of that is to be finished with the belief that you are other than that. And in the absence of that belief, everything is obvious. Life is sweet. Life is not to be trivialized. It's a great gift. So thank you for your time. Thank you always for your time. Thank you for your efforts, for your encouragement, for your reports, for your willingness to grapple with me about the things that seem to stand in your way, so that all can hear that we are all the same in this. We all have the same confusions, the same misunderstandings, the same resistance to reality. And we all have the same capacity and possibility of stopping for a second and looking for what's real. And it's the looking that does the work, really. Nothing that happens in the mind, nothing that the mind has to say about it, is of any consequence. It's the looking that does the work. So see what you are, as you have always seen. Know what you are, as you have always known. And thank you from the bottom of my heart for this satsang. Om Shanti.